Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us today on a very nice Monday morning here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Glad to have you with us, as well as the guests we have performing. They're here. They're performing in the sense that they're here in front of our microphones, you know.
That's right. We have to come up with an answer.
That's right.
We're just talking about that.
You make it sound like Meet the Press. It's really not.
What's he going to say?
Oh, I'm liable to say anything, but you can answer any way you choose.
Well, they had that disclaimer earlier that nothing we say represents. It always makes me want to say something that would, you know, misrepresent someone, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of just lobbing it out there.
That's right. Well, that's what we do here on KKFI. We're known for riding the edge on things. You're listening, by the way, to the voice of Jeremiah Anna. He is the executive director and founder and CEO of Culture House.
Right.
And he is here along with Tobin James, the associate artistic director. They are here to talk about the Sterling Dance Theater and their production of Parables of Prayers. That is the overall.
Parables and Prayer coming up this weekend at the Carlson Center.
Friday the 24th at 7 p.m., Saturday the 25th at 2 o'clock p.m., and Saturday evening the 25th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Polsky Theater on the campus of Johnson County Community College, 12345, easy to remember, College Boulevard, Overland Park, Kansas. If you need to MapQuest, 66205 is the zip code that you put into MapQuest things. Thank you both for being with us. Tobin, the associate artistic director. Titles can be a pain, can't they, Tobin?
Yeah.
But you're glad to have it, I'm sure.
I really love that title.
She and Mona Sterling, and my wife, they run the company artistically together. And also Tobin does a lot of managing the company.
Yes.
And training the company, and they work together. And Mona's not here today because she's actually in rehearsal.
Yes.
Yeah, well, with the performances beginning this Friday, time is getting short.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's hear a little bit about the show, Parables of Prayer and Prayers. There's some local connections with mm-hmm. that as well.
Yeah, it's a collection of pieces, and many of them are brand new works. Tobin has a new piece. Mona has a couple new pieces. One of them is the premiere. It is called For Those Who Mourn. And it's dedicated to the victims' families of the Jewish Community Center shooting, as well as the Jewish community. It had a real personal connection for us because the young teenager that lost his life with his grandfather was a student of ours. He'd taken classes at the Culture House and done shows, and I worked with him at a Christmas show at Church of the Resurrection. And so we knew Reet, and the day that it happened, a lot of his friends were in rehearsal. We're at an event together, and so at the Culture House. And so, it was just devastating for the students, for the kids, his friends. And so she was creating this piece about someone mourning and the friends trying to comfort them. And it's a very sophisticated piece, wouldn't you say? It deals with a real complex situation. And Mona describes it as, since we have four kids, and she just couldn't imagine, you know, what it would be like to go through something like that. And so she crafted this piece to kind of, you know, peer into that moment, if you will, that experience of family members trying to, you know, walk through that. So it's a very powerful piece.
Yeah. Is it difficult to get people to be motivated during a piece like this because of the sadness involved with it?
For the artist?
For the artist.
It is a challenge, but that's part of the artistic process. So it is a normal, almost predictable process when you're dealing with trained performers. You have to trust them going through the evolution of getting into the character and taking the emotion and adding it to the artistry of their dancing as well.
Yeah, I would imagine Jeremiah talked about the shocking nature of what happened there that day and how it probably affected the young people, especially involved, if they were going to class with him.
Well, you know, if you remember, it was at an audition.
Mm-hmm.
It was at a public audition. And so all these people were gathered from the theater, musical theater community around Kansas City, doing something that's just so normal that tons of our kids at our studio do, that our own kids have done. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a normal thing to go on in Kansas City and totally disconnected from the, you know, evil motivations of this guy. And so I think that, of course, is shocking alone. But the piece is also dedicated to the Jewish community itself, because even though no one who was Jewish died that day, it was directly against them. And, of course, you know, how horrible is that? And it was, you know, the only, you know, after the events happened themselves, it was a beautiful thing to see the Kansas City community rise up in support of the Jewish community with, you know, amongst us. And that was very encouraging. But because of the loss of life, discussing the fact that it was the Jewish community directly targeted, the kind of was not discussed as much. And so this piece is for them as well, because there are crazies out there.
Of course there are. And yeah. Irony of ironies, later that day, that afternoon, in that same theater, was to be the final performance, I guess, of To Kill a Mockingbird, a play that deals with prejudice.
That's right. Yeah.
And then another rumor, only rumor that I had heard, I don't know this to be a fact, and I probably shouldn't talk about rumors without knowing, was that the young man who was killed was to be Tom Sawyer in Theater in the Park's show. Can you substantiate that?
Well, he was very talented and just a great guy, you know, great friends, and I can't substantiate that. Yeah. But regardless, you know, he was like a lot of those guys, just real positive, real upbeat, very encouraging, encouraging to the kids around him. It's a great community of young people in Kansas City. And it was just a real tragedy. And their family, the way they walked through that was also very inspiring. And so whatever we can do, especially for the kids who are still living with that experience and the loss of a friend, this is a small thing we can do, you know, to kind of keep a line on it and say we have not forgotten.
Sure. Sure. The show, we're talking with Jeremiah Anna, the executive director and CEO, founder and CEO of Sterling Dance, and Tobin James, the associate artistic director. And, she directs, she does choreography, rehearsals, teaches. They keep you busy over there.
Yes, they do.
Working with, is it for the most part young people in the cast?
Yes. Yeah. I would describe, I guess, young adults is how we would describe them.
Uh-huh.
Yes, these are women who have primarily graduated from college and have gone on to, you know, their professional aspirations. And
do you want to talk about some of the performers involved in these shows that are going to be happening Friday night?
Well, I would have to absolutely start with Alexandra Wilson. She is just one of our just a very powerful performer and extremely talented, but a very giving artist. And it's not unusual in rehearsals for her to be full on in tears because of her process of getting involved in the works. And then we have new graduates from UMKC who have just joined our company. Emily Berger and Aaron.
Well, you know, how many people in the company are from Kansas City? We kind of have a mix now.
Yes.
Many of the dancers come from outside around the country. We've had even some dancers from Europe. But we are excited that we are drawing. In the past, we've had predominantly dancers from the outside. But this year, we have several dancers from the Kansas City area who are just excellent. Most of them, I think, trained at UMKC. Isn't that correct?
Yes, a good number of them have trained at UMKC. When you go through our programs, if you're looking at the bios, you'll see UMKC very prevalent in the lineup of dancers.
Yeah, so we're excited about that, you know, Kansas City is growing in the arts, as you know, and that the dancers are staying. They're not graduating. They're not, you know, completing their training. They're staying in Kansas City and auditioning for us and other companies, and that's very encouraging.
Yeah, there's things for them to do here.
That's right.
If that were not the case, they probably would leave and go off to places like Chicago.
Right.
Places like that.
Or New York. And I actually, in one way, I mean, you know, in fact, if you're a dancer out there, come audition for Sterling Dance Theater this spring. We're always looking for new talent. You know, we hold auditions every year. And it's just phenomenal to... The auditions are exciting because you're seeing these young, talented artists and striving for excellence. And that's who we are, and that's who we highlight in our concerts.
Sure.
And in fact, it's not happening for Parables and Prayers, but we do a show every winter called Underground at the Kauffman Center. And we'll be doing our 8th annual performance of that. Paul Horsley chose it as one of the top 10 performances of the decade for Kansas City. And that was actually the first collaboration of Mona and Tobin. And it was after that Tobin became leadership in the company. But we'll also be holding auditions at the Paseo Academy of the Performing Arts. And it's not solidified yet, but probably working with friends of Alvin Ailey on some of that this year. So it's great to be partnering with other great organizations in town and hoping to stir up young talent to point them in the right direction.
Yeah, one of your productions won some awards, I read. It was passed on to me.
That's right.
The awards, and so would you like to brag on that?
Sure, if I can, just for a second. I don't want to get too far away from Parables and Prayers, but every summer the Culture House does a summer Broadway theater production. And the last couple of years we've really invested a lot into it and kind of built it up and have been able to perform in great venues. So first it was at the Carlson Center at Yardley Hall, and last year we did Big River at the Kauffman Center. And there is a fairly new organization, the American Music and Entertainment Awards organization on the East Coast, and they flew out some judges to see the show. They heard about us through one of our students, actually, Abby Peake, who is pretty tech savvy, and she has 17,000 followers. She's a musical theater performer and actress, and so they had her come out because she has so many fans, and she was a part of the events. But they flew some judges out, and we won Best Musical of the Year. It's awards for amateur theater around the country and music awards. And we won, and they went out there and took home the awards, did the red carpet thing, and we got several awards. It was exciting.
Yeah, well, you can brag on that.
I didn't have anything to do with it. The director, Amy Sander, and the musical director, Kelsey Clark, you know, were the real heroes of the production. Robert Bowen, the lighting designer, he's from Texas. He won Best Lighting, you know. So there was a lot of wins there.
I'll bet so. We're talking with Jeremiah Anna and Tobin James about Parables and Prayers, the new show about to kick off. It's starting this Friday, the 24th, a production of the Sterling Dance Company. Performances will be at the Polsky Theater on the campus of Johnson County Community College, 12345 College Boulevard,
right.
Overland Park, Kansas. It begins this Friday, so are things shaping up, Tobin? Does it look like it's going to go well?
Yes, things are shaping up very nicely. There is a lot of effort being made on many, many fine details to polish this production.
Does it have, we know one part is in honor, should we say, of the victims of the shooting, but there are other parts to the show as well.
Yes. Yes, we have a piece called that I choreographed called Don't Say Anything, and I was inspired by events in the news that often had to do with people wanting other people to be quiet and keep secrets, whether it was the assault of women in the military or issues involving children and priests in the Catholic Church, and then even if it's just whistleblowing with at various different corporate situations. It just had to do with the whole idea of people wanting people to keep things in. And sometimes I don't want to tell, in this instance, I don't want to tell the audience what to derive from it, but you should just take the title, take what you see and just get your own idea from it and see how it might affect an issue in your life where you might need to just speak up.
Yeah, you're hoping that they will identify in that range.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And then we have the piece, her last prayer, which is dedicated to, it's not dedicated, but it's inspired by a shooting of a martyr in China.
Yeah, a teenage girl who lost her life for her faith. And we're bringing that piece back. It's not a premiere. It was done years ago. But because of ISIS and the slaughter, the genocide, it's not a war. It's a genocide going on in the Middle East. We wanted to bring this back and restage it in their memory, in their honor, and also to kind of bring it home. It's so far away. It's so horrific. And we see images, but the news flashes by quickly, and we move on to the next thing and things like that. But it's still going on today. And we're connected with a man who's in the news a lot. He's got a church in Baghdad, Pastor Canon Andrew White. And so we follow his news reports and his reporting. And it's, you know, there was just huge bombings, suicide bombings just this weekend in Baghdad. And so they're there. They've made it into the city. And so we're restaging this just to kind of hopefully give us a more personal, local connection to our experience of it. To remember to pray for these people and to do what we can as a community, as a country, to do something about this. No one says it's simple, but hopefully through a piece of art, that's what we can do.
Yeah. Now, that's what artists should do.
Right.
Just to put the images out there, if nothing else. And an image can be done through acting, through singing, through dancing.
Yeah. Right.
And one of the things that we hear often from our audiences are the way that the acting is used through the dance. Our audience members understand our pieces. They are not so abstract that people are left wondering, what is that about? Mm. So there's also this mix of grace plus athleticism, which means that even if someone were to drag along a boyfriend or a spouse who didn't care for dance, we often hear from audience members like that who say, I got it and I understand it and I don't like usually
we've
to
converted
attend
a lot of guys,
yes,
you know, from
of,
sports to dance. You know,
yes.
They get them. You bring them. We'll convert them.
But it's all just very, everything is just very, very clearly defined. But we also have this wonderful mix of heart-stirring, impactful works, plus light-hearted, joyful experiences as well.
Yeah, the performances begin Friday the 24th at 7 p.m., and then two performances on Saturday the 25th, an afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m., then an evening performance on Saturday the 25th at 7 o'clock p.m. in the Polsky Theater. That is on the east side of Johnson County Community College. You go in the main entrance?
The main entrance is right off of College Boulevard, and you'll see the big turnabout there, and that's where you go in.
Yeah, and that's the performance 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then 7 o'clock at night. The number to call for more information, this is what I have, so correct me if this isn't the right one.
Okay.
913-469-4445. That's the number to call. You can also click through your website.
Which is Storling. I'll pronounce it a little different because of the website. But it's storlingdance.org, storlingdance.org. And so, yeah.
And then lots of other information on your twin organizations, really. And I was going to ask about that, if I could take a couple of minutes. Your organization is really two.
Yeah, we're really two brands, two organizations, a dance company. We actually started first, and then the Culture House kind of grew alongside it after we moved to Kansas City from Sweden in 1996. And so they kind of grew together, and they just kept growing, so we couldn't pick between one or the other, you know. So yeah.
And people talk about moving their organization from, say, Indiana to Kansas City.
Yeah.
This is Sweden.
My wife's from Finland, and in fact, we were speaking earlier. But my wife's from Finland, and I was living in Sweden. I was in a dance theater company in Sweden for 6 years, and halfway through that experience, I was in Israel teaching at a dance conference, and I met Mona, and she was much better than I was, and so I said, well, I've got to end the competition. And so we got married soon after that, and she moved to Sweden, and we traveled. You know, one of the most powerful experiences was I moved there in the early fall of 1989, and a couple months later, the wall came down. Mm-hmm. So I was able to travel and tour throughout the East Bloc, meeting all kinds of people newly freed and being a part of conversations, just examining what does that mean? What does freedom mean? And meeting especially Christian people who were now it was legal for them to express their faith, and they're asking all kinds of questions, and what is the West really like? They've been lied to. So it was a very powerful experience. And so we spent years traveling throughout Europe and Eastern Europe and Middle East, and crafted this concept of the dance company and the culture house, and we never thought we'd come back to the States. I didn't. And it was visiting here, and my brother still lived here, and he said, no, Kansas City's really going to, you know, boom with the arts. And I said, really? You know?
Yeah,
and he was right.
Years ago, it did seem kind of
I mean, just to be honest, in the conversation, how it really went was he said, why don't you move to Kansas City? And I said, well, why? I mean, I'm performing in London. I'm performing in Stockholm. What would I do here? And I said, they only go see Annie. Isn't that all they do? I mean, I wasn't even being sarcastic. I just didn't see Kansas City. You know, I knew they had the Kansas City Ballet, which was great, and the symphony. But when it came to being a young artist wanting to create new work, I didn't see the audience. And actually on that trip, you know, that conversation, and I met Charles Bruffy. And I heard his music on the radio, and I thought, ooh, this is good. So, you know, in a small way, the Kansas City Chorale helped inspire us to come here.
Sure. I kind of skipped over Tobin, but tell us about your background.
Oh, my background. I'm an East Coast girl.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in Washington, D.C., and then attended college at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia, and then went on to train in New York, where I met my husband, and we then had two children, and I told him to take me 2 hours in any direction away from New York just because I needed a calmer environment to raise my children. Pick a direction in 2 hours. Because, you know, once you get 2 hours from New York, things settle down a little bit.
Probably
yes.
So, but you're a lot further than
I'm two
hours.
Days away from
two
New York. the way we map our trip, yes. And now I had two more additional children here. Yes, four children is required to be in leadership at the culture.
That's it.
A child-filled organization.
Yes, very much so. But I was doing freelance dance at the time, so it was okay for me to leave New York, although I was concerned about the training that I would encounter. I was when I moved here, I was introduced to the Westport Ballet, and was very pleased with the level of training that I saw that they received. So when I moved here, just after having my son, I went to attend classes with the Westport Ballet, and different people came into my lives and introduced me to Mona and Jeremiah.
And we actually danced for her first.
They used to work for me.
She was our boss. So that was great. And we're very fortunate because Tobin came out of the Graham School, the Martha Graham School of Dance, and I believe is the only person from the school in Kansas City she's not the only person that teaches Graham, but the only one that has graduated from the program that's in Kansas City. Is that, you think that's true? Yeah, that's true. And so she teaches Graham for the company and for us at the Culture House.
And different studios around town, at a school out in Grandview called Dramatic Truth. I've been an adjunct professor at UMKC. And many years ago, I used to also teach the Graham Technique at Kansas City Ballet School.
To learn more about that, you can be contacted at Culture House or Sterling.
Yeah, culturehouse.com or sterlingdance.org. There's information. So now that you're a mature dancer, we can call her a resource for Kansas City.
Okay. I don't know if women would like that.
Well, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
You'll get emails on the loser.
The big event coming up, opening this Friday, Parables and Prayers with new works for those who mourn at the that's about the Jewish Community Center shootings. Kicks off Friday the 24th at 7 o'clock p.m. Two performances on Saturday the 25th, 2 o'clock p.m. and 7 o'clock p.m. at the Polsky Theater on the campus of Johnson County Community College, located at 12345 College Boulevard, Overland Park. The number to call for more information, 913-469-4445, or online at sterlingdance.org. But let me spell it for you, sterlingdance.org. It looks like it's Sterling Dance, but it's actually pronounced Sterling Dance. But when you go online, you need to type S-T-O-R-L-I-N-G.
We got to keep you on your toes.
That's right. Yeah, I pronounced it wrong several times originally. I'm straight now.
Okay, you got it. You're in.
Thanks so much for being with us. Jeremiah Anna, the Executive Director, Founder, and CEO of Culture House, and Tobin James, the Associate Artistic Director. Best of luck to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for being here. We're going to take our break. When we return, I'm going to go even more classical with you. It's classical day.
All right.
When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. War is heck. And if you needed further evidence, there's the new Brad Pitt World War II drama, Fury. In this ultra-violent action flick, Pitt plays an emotionally hardened Army sergeant leading a five-man crew in a Sherman tank deep into Nazi Germany during the waning days of the war. Gritty, grimy, and unflinchingly brutal, Fury almost revels in the ugliness of war. Pitt is terrific, and the able supporting cast include Shia LaBeouf, Logan Lerman, and Michael Peña. But their characters are sketchily written and the plot is melodramatic. While it doesn't add anything new to the genre, Fury succeeds as a depiction of the savage nature of war. Do social media and modern technology add to our emotional lives or detract from them? That's the familiar underlying question given a heavy-handed treatment in Men, Women, and Children. This overlong ensemble drama features several interwoven stories covering a number of contemporary social issues that play out among some parents and high school kids. The notable cast includes Jennifer Garner, Rosemary DeWitt, Judy Greer, and yes, even Adam Sandler. Director Jason Reitman, who gave us strong movies like Juno and Up in the Air, stumbles this time out, offering a preachy and depressing examination of societal ills. Men, Women, and Children is a movie for none of the above. Also opening this week, Book of Life is a 3D animated fantasy set during Mexico's Day of the Dead. Channing Tatum, Zoe Saldana, Ice Cube, Cheech Marin, and Diego Luna are among the voice cast members. The Best of Me is yet another adaptation of a Nicholas Sparks romance novel, Michelle Monaghan and James Marsden star. And finally, The Green Prince is a documentary about the son of a Hamas leader who became an informant for the Israelis. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
This week, they often arrived at night. They would break into the houses. They would have flashlights. They would hold down the victims, and they would cooperate to shear off the beards of the men and the hair of the women.
It's the story of a renegade Amish group known as the Bergholz Barbers. I'm Maureen Fiedler. That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon.
For the Halloween season, we present the Pacifica Radio Archive 2003 production of Louise Fletcher's classic suspense radio drama, Sorry, Wrong Number, starring Shirley Knight and Edna.
And it's all over before sunrise. Wednesday morning, 5 to 6.
And I killed the guy that gave it to me.
On the next Thursday night special, high school students take to the airwaves on the Brain Jam Poetry Hour, Thursday at 7 p.m.
This week on The Pioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
We are not just artists, we're also cultural workers, we're activists, we're organizers, and we're educators.
Art is our weapon, our medicine, our voice, and our vision.
I'm Neil Harvey. This week, it's drummer John Densmore of The Doors and climbing poetry on The Pioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30, right before Eclectics.
Everything is eclectic here on our station. Welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoger, host. We're going to tell you about an event that's tonight. So the urgency is there. It's tonight. We don't want you to miss it. You'll get to see it, and this will happen before all the World Series excitement starts out, and it'll probably be a great time by all. Ragtime Revelry, an organization here in town, and we're going to talk about that. They are presenting Richard Dowling in concert with Frederick Hodges, both of you. Richard?
That's right. Two pianos.
Yeah, Richard is an American concert pianist. Has a rather large, I got this from your biography online, has a rather large repertory, tours the country, the world, classical music for the most part, but at least most of the examples they had online were of a classical variety. But what you're going to be playing tonight is ragtime music.
That's right. Well, when I was a little boy growing up in Houston, that's when the Sting came along. Was it 73 or 74 when the Academy Award for Best Picture that year, and the country just went on fire with ragtime.
Yes, sir.
Which had sort of lain dormant for about 50 years or so. And I was caught up in the tornado of that, and I bought the collected works of Scott Joplin book that came out shortly thereafter and learned all the Scott Joplin rags behind my piano teacher's back.
Wow.
And I've been playing ragtime ever since, and I got to meet a whole new world of people a few years ago, which included Jerry and Mary Grace Lanise, who are the directors of the Kansas City Ragtime Revelry, and they've become like family to me, as has Frederick Hodges, who's sort of like my adopted brother. He's a wonderful pianist from San Francisco who's on his way here now. We'll be playing tonight a concert called Gershwin and More for two pianos. Lots of wonderful pieces of George Gershwin that we've arranged for two pianos, plus a lot of ragtime as well. It'll be a family-friendly event.
Yeah, it's going to be tonight, and Jerry is here as well. Jerry Lanise is also with us. He's the president of the Kansas City Ragtime Revelry. Tonight's concert is at the Schmidt Music. Is it a store?
A piano store.
Schmidt Music is a piano store in Rosanna Square, which is at Metcalf and 119th.
Yeah, the actual address, 7316 West 119th, essentially the corner of 119th and Metcalf in Overland Park. If you need to MapQuest that, that's the address, 7316 West 119th, and the zip code 66213 to hear this concert for two pianos. 7 o'clock, yes. 7 o'clock p.m., and it'll be Richard Dowling along with Frederick Hodges, Gershwin and More for two pianos. Are you still playing by yourself? Was it an adjustment to play with someone else?
Oh, no. Frederick and I have been having fun at ragtime festivals all across the country, and, you know, he's a virtuoso pianist. You know what a virtuoso is, by the way? A virtuoso is a musician with real high morals.
Oh, really? So obviously you
exactly.
You know? I didn't know that.
Would you want to give the audience a little teaser with a little Rhapsody in Blue?
Sure. There? We have Rhapsody in Blue here. Some of the cut of it. Oh, there it is right there. Can you hear it on your headphones? Do you want to comment as we listen?
That's me.
It's a very well-known piece.
It is.
Where did it originate?
Gershwin proved the old adage that Leonard Bernstein came up with. This was, of course, after Gershwin. Leonard Bernstein famously once said, "To achieve great things, two things are needed, a plan and not enough time." And we've all been under the gun with that, with various final exams or papers or whatever. Gershwin composed Rhapsody in Blue in about 2.5 weeks, holed up inside a hotel suite at the Roosevelt Hotel, adjacent to Grand Central Station in New York. Back in September 23, he had agreed to write a new jazz piano concerto for Paul Whiteman, who was the big band leader in New York. And over Christmas time, George and Ira Gershwin were at a billiard parlor playing pool with friends, and Ira was reading the newspaper and opened it and saw that Paul Whiteman was advertising a concert featuring George Gershwin premiering a new jazz concerto, and Gershwin had forgotten about it. And so over Christmas time, he wrote this piece in 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
So it was premiered in February 1924.
Yeah,
it was a huge success.
The thing I remember most about the Sting and hearing it was Scott Joplin music. Boy, it moved. It really moved. It made you tap your toes, yeah, or your hand.
There's something, you know, even as a musician, and I've been a musician for 40 years now, I still haven't figured out what the power of music is over human beings. It's impossible to stay in a bad mood if you listen to ragtime.
Ah.
It's seriously an antidote to the blues. It is just happy music. Even when a slow ragtime piece is on, Jerry, you'll agree with me. There's just something, you get energy from this music. And especially because it's an American music, I think Americans particularly respond to it. But I know when I go abroad and play ragtime, of course, people think I'm some sort of exotic bird, you know. they deeply love it and appreciate it.
Yeah, it does. It does give you an uplifting type feeling to listen to it.
It does.
Yeah, the era of ragtime. Well, I suppose you're president of the Kansas City Ragtime Revelry. What attracted you to ragtime music?
Well, we've talked about this recently, and a number of years ago, my wife and I went to a concert, kind of on a whim, at the Johnson County Community College. This pianist was going to be playing, and it happened to be Morten Gunnar Larsen, who comes from Norway, but is a very famous ragtime pianist, and Morten's uniform at that time was tails, so he came out onto the stage in these tails and played ragtime music. He ended the concert by saying, "Now, if you like this music, there's a festival just down the road in Sedalia." And so my wife and I went to that festival, and we've been hooked ever since.
Yeah, what era did the music come out of?
It started in the 1890s, late 1890s, and through 1914.
Was it the kind of music you would have heard at the dance hall or drinking establishment?
Well, let's put it this way. Ragtime was pretty much invented in Missouri. It was usually in alternative places, shall we say.
I see.
Nice background music for alternative activities.
Well, then it fits right.
You're right. Alcohol consumption and all kinds of things. So, And that's what sort of gave it a black cloud. You know, it was too much fun. But nowadays, you know, since the music is 100 years old and we've forgotten the pedigree that it was born with, we just take the music on its own terms.
Uh-huh.
And the music on its own terms with the syncopation is the basis, really, for rock music today. I mean, it's the thing that people respond to is the rhythm. We don't associate what it was born with anymore. Uh-huh. So, I mean, ministers used to sort of decry if you listened to too much ragtime, you know, you were committing sinful acts, and little, you know, young girls who took piano lessons to, you know, to fill their time while they were waiting to be courted for marriage, would go to the sheet music store and buy the maple leaf rag, and they'd send them home in a brown paper bag, and they'd hide it in the piano bench and play it when their parents were out. You know, because it was sort of not considered to be quite kosher.
Yeah, I'm sure when you first learned piano, I'm sure you had to play the basics, some Beethoven.
Sure. My teacher didn't want me to play ragtime.
Really?
No. That's why I had to learn all those Scott Joplin tunes behind her back. You know? I sprung the maple leaf rag on her one day, and she almost fell off the bench, you know.
I would think it would be more fun to do ragtime songs.
Doing anything elicits more fun, you know.
Well, I guess you just kind of settled on the point. I guess that probably has something to do with it. I don't know. Do you want to defend?
No, but
you want to defend?
One of the things we always think of ragtime as a very lively music.
No, yeah, listen
but
to it.
But then if you listen to the soundtrack of The Sting, And this happened to me a little while ago. All of a sudden I say, wow, that's Solace, which is a totally different kind of piece that Joplin wrote. Very thought-provoking.
Very sentimental.
Sentimental.
Yeah.
And then there is a contemporary piece, Roberto Clemente, which is also a very sentimental piece written by David Thomas Roberts.
And another one that I'm going to play tonight by William Bolcom, who's one of America's best-known classical composers, also dabbles in ragtime, and he composed a work called Graceful Ghost Rag that's exquisitely beautiful, very sentimental, very melancholy. So not all ragtime is, you know, happy-go-lucky. Some of it has very tender feelings.
Yeah. I saw a guy in Branson one time who played two pianos, one with each hand. Is that more of a novelty? Yeah, this isn't what this is going to be.
That's just showing off.
Yeah. So it'll be the two of you playing to complement each other?
Yes. Back and forth.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, tell me about Frederick. He's not here. You met him, you already said when you met him.
Right. Frederick is a classically trained pianist like me. He is one of San Francisco Bay Area's preeminent performers. He does a variety of styles. He plays in a couple of society orchestras, plays a lot of private parties. He plays at all the major ragtime festivals, a lot of the jazz festivals. He specializes particularly in 1920s and 30s music. He's really totally absorbed the style. He can mimic a player piano. You'd swear he was a machine.
Ah.
He even has a little slot in the side where you can put quarters in.
Oh, really?
You
know?
And he's quite in demand. He and I really hit it off. We both have this super duper classical technique. So, you know, a lot of, not to denigrate my fellow performers, but a lot in ragtime are people are self-taught. So Frederick and I come from the background of having done a zillion scales and arpeggios, and, you know, we have biceps on our knuckles. So when the two of us get together, there's some fireworks happen.
I'll bet so. Does it sound like a competition at times?
No.
We're
very much like two really good tennis players who aren't trying to compete, but just simply volley the ball back and forth across the net for fun.
Yeah.
You know, we have that kind of That kind of enjoyment.
Gershwin and Moore, that's tonight, I guess one night only.
Correct.
At Schmidt Music, the Rosanna Square Shopping Center, 7 o'clock tonight. That's Schmidt Music is located at 7316 West 119th, essentially the corner of 119th and Metcalf, Overland Park, Kansas, zip code 66213. If you like to MapQuest things, the northwest corner, they tell me. Richard Dowling and Frederick Hodges will play Gershwin and Moore. So we've talked about the Gershwin. What's the Moore?
The Moore is we're each going to take turns doing ragtime solos. Frederick's going to play a couple of stride pieces. I'm going to do Bill Bolcom's Graceful Ghost. I'm going to do a piece called Cataract Rag, which I think is sounds like Beethoven meeting Scott Joplin. It's from 1914. That Cataract Rag by Robert Hampton is exactly 100 years old this year. So we're gonna play a variety of things. I'm going to play a couple of a Joplin rag called the Ragtime Dance, which was used in The Sting. Mm-hmm. Frederick's going to play Magnetic Rag by Joplin, which was also written in 1914. So we're sort of covering all the bases. And I'm going to do a boogie piece called Bumble Boogie, based on Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's Flight of the Bumblebee.
Oh, yeah. I bet a ragtime version of that would sound cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be happening tonight.
Tonight.
Tonight and tonight only. Tell us about the organization, Ragtime Revelry.
Kansas City Ragtime Revelry, as the title implies, is a Kansas City organization which promotes ragtime music. We have 4 to 5 concerts a year. And depending on when we can schedule the musicians in, our next concert coming up is February 5th. Dalton Ridenour from New York City. And then after that in April, we have a duet, Stephanie Trick and Polo Alderigi, who play great music together with a very unique four hands, one piano technique. A wonderful couple. And we're starting to get ready for the fall of next year.
Yeah, lots of planning goes into all of this.
Yes.
Do you have an organization that people can join and be members?
We have an organization that people can join. We have a website, KC Ragtime Revelry.
That's what I have, KC.
.org, and that's the correct one. So, and that's we keep that current. So that's where people can go to find out about us.
Sure. So they can join, and what does that give them? A special deal on tickets and things?
People can join, and we do encourage donors, which give some complimentary tickets with it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty good.
Yes.
How often? You said you had one coming up in February. How often do you have things?
We have 4 to 5 concerts a year. Depends upon the availability of musicians. We try to work with other organizations in the area. For example, we have Frederick and Richard here this evening, and tomorrow they will go on to Tulsa where they will perform a similar concert. So we try to work with other organizations to economize on the travel expenses.
Sure. It's a tour.
It is.
Yeah. Were they available and you didn't want to get on the tour?
This was very coincidental.
I like these stories.
My wife and I happened to go to Chicago to hear Frederick the second week in August. And he mentioned that they had just finished the arrangements for the Tulsa concert. And I said, Frederick, what are you doing the day before or the day after? And he got on the phone and talked with Richard, and so the concert this evening was put together.
Well, where had you been before coming here? I'm just curious.
A week ago, last night, I played a solo recital in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico.
Oh, well, you weren't real close.
No. I just flew back to Houston and then came here yesterday
from
Houston.
The concert in Mexico, for instance, was not then ragtime. It was a regular classical
concert. It was a regular classical concert.
Well, did you play then?
It was the gala opening concert for the Pro Musica recital series in San Miguel de Allende, and the presenter asked me a year ago to come do this big opening of the season, and he said, I want something special. Why don't you do a program of all the most famous classical tunes all on one program? I said, okay. So I did, you name it, I did it. It was a long program, but everybody had his or her favorites on it. Everything from the Moonlight Sonata to Liszt's Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2, and Claire de Lune of Debussy, some Rachmaninoff and Rhapsody in Blue, and it was a great program.
So you mix the two together, like Rachmaninoff and ragtime.
Right, mm-hmm. It's Rachmaninoff.
So that must be a lot of fun. I know it's a lot of work.
It is.
But it also sounds like a lot of fun.
This program didn't have any ragtime specifically on it, but a lot of times in my classical concerts nowadays, I'll do a mixed bag program, classical, and then I put some ragtime or Gershwin at the end, and everybody really likes it a lot. It's a little unorthodox in the classical community because we in the classical community tend to be pretty uptight. But I find the audiences really enjoy it. And if the presenters are selling a lot of tickets, then they're happy too.
I'll bet.
So it's a win-win situation for everyone.
Yeah, I say, it really moves as I listen to it here. I can't really tap the board. I'll mess up the volume levels, but I want to. I'm fighting from tapping. My throat's tapping. You can't help it. What about the music does that, do you think?
It's the syncopation.
I'm glad that there's a reason.
Yeah. Syncopation sounds like a blood disease or something, and in a way, it does get in your blood. It's hard to imagine life without syncopation because we've had pop music for 100 years now. But there was a time, 100 years ago, before the invention of ragtime, there were really only 4 kinds of music in the world. There was concert music, which is what we call classical music today. And then there was sacred music, music you would hear in church. There was folk music, which, generally speaking, wasn't written down. all kinds of different folk music, bluegrass, you know, music out in the countryside, you know, spirituals, whatever. And then there was patriotic music, you know, yeah, anything having to do with a specific country. And that was really the only kind of music there was. And none of those styles really incorporated much syncopation. Really, Stephen Foster, maybe a little bit with folk music, but when ragtime came along in the 1890s and integrated African syncopation, drumming syncopation, with sort of European piano music, the result was the beginning of music as we know it today, rock and roll. And that's what created the divide between classical music and pop music today. And we know who's won that game. I mean, classical music is a very tiny percentage. It's very well part of the fabric of daily life in America and everywhere in the world. But most music that's consumed is popular rock music. And the basis for that is syncopation. The basis of that is ragtime, which was invented right here in America, in Missouri. And that really has caused a seismic shift in the musical world as a result of ragtime.
Now, music has different effects on us. I know, for instance, classical, it is said, at least a woman I know who has a master's degree in psychology said whenever her kids get a little unruly, she pops a CD of some classical music in the car CD, and it calms them down, she said. It also works for animals and for people as well.
Mm-hmm. It's true, and that's the inherent difference. As a musician, I can explain it in lay terms, and that is classical music ebbs and flows. It has what we call rubato, which means literally robbed time, where you borrow time and you pay it back so that the music gets faster and slower. It ebbs and flows like waves, whereas rock music has a steady tempo. It's just boom, 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 boom. It's based in dance, and that's why you see children react to rock music, to ragtime music, to jazz music with its steady beat, because it's just part of the internal clock of a human being. Whereas classical music is not that way. Some classical music can have episodes in it where it has a steady beat, but for the most part, the music isn't dominated by rhythm. It's dominated by melody and by harmonic shifts. So it's a different style, and it affects the brain in a different way. As you get older, classical music becomes much more of something that people appreciate. And I've seen that in effect in, for example, San Miguel de Allende, which is an expat retirement community for Canadians and Americans and some Europeans. Not real old folks, people that have retired early and want to move down to Mexico. It is a very strong expat community. If you do the math, the people that are in their 60s and early 70s now would have been hippies 40 years ago, and they wouldn't have touched classical music with a 10-foot pole It's what their parents liked and was the establishment music and would have been, you know, anathema to them. But now they're older, and I have had so many audience members come up to me and say, I didn't know that this music existed. This is so wonderful. You know, and they don't know that about ragtime either. They like both. They grew up with Peter, Paul, and Mary and Joni Mitchell. And I love that music too, and the Beatles. But this other music is great on its own terms too. And they're just now discovering it in their 60s and 70s. And it's a revelation to them.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have a chance to hear some ragtime music tonight, one night only, tonight at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Schmidt Music Center store.
Music store.
Music store in the Rosanna Square Shopping Center, 7316 West 119th, essentially the northwest corner of 119th and Metcalf, Overland Park, Kansas. It's at 7 o'clock p.m. The music of Richard Dowling and Frederick Hodges. At least they'll be playing.
You bet.
Gershwin actually wrote it, I suppose.
That's right. And at Schmidt Music, the pianos will be first class. That's Kansas City's Steinway dealer. So we'll have two beautiful Steinways to play on, and it'll be terrific.
So if they need work done on their piano at home, they should perhaps check them out as far as a piano store. I don't know much about pianos or piano stores, so we'll have to get their expertise on that. A lot of people have need pianos refurbished, and sure. I've heard that story yeah. many times. They don't know where to go or right. where to
they,
turn.
They know all about know. Pianos there.
yeah. Well, not to, I'm not plugging them. I don't know them at all, but there are stores. People can do things like that. But the concert is tonight. The number to call for, well, I don't have a number. For more information, it's but Schmidt Music, I assume, is in the phone book.
Information's at kcragtimerevelry.org.
Okay, KC Ragtime Revelry, Revelry spelled REVELRY.org. And you can also get information on, do you have meetings?
Oh, yes. We have meetings of our board that do the planning and keep this going.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you both for being here. Richard Dowling, an American concert pianist, a large repertoire, classical, ragtime, all different types, really.
Thanks for having
as
us.
Well.
Thank
nice
you very much.
Here today. He'll be with Frederick Hodges tonight in concert, two pianos. It's called Gershwin and More, and Jerry Lanise, the president of the local organization, Kansas City Ragtime Revelry. Thank you both for being here and
thank
telling
you.
Us about this as well.
Yep. Thank you very much for happiness.
Yeah, the Jazz Insider is taking the day off, so the Jazz Geek will be here, but the excitement will continue. More music, more jazz, perhaps some more ragtime as well. We'll see. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.